Good morning, and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for December 29th, 2013. Koyo Kubota here, so glad you joined us. Yesterday, we got together at my brother's place for the annual Mochitsuki gathering. Mochitsuki is a time when we make a special kind of rice, and we make rice cakes. They're translated, and mochi is usually translated as rice cakes, but it's not really a cake. It's because it's not sweet unless you put some sweet things into the center of it, but it comes out. We use nowadays we use a machine. In the old days, we used to pound the mochi with big wooden mallets. But now it's machine is used just like a bread maker. You put the rice in and it cooks it and it stirs it up, and then you put it into another gadget that you crank and it comes out. And then that little bit that comes out, you cut it off, and then I was the cutter. My job is always the cutter. It's like my cousin Earl cranks it up, and a little bit comes out of the spout, the mochi, hot mochi. I cut it off with the way this gadget is made, the cutter, and then I throw it onto the table where there's cornstarch scattered and everyone's standing around them, and they get that mochi and they put it into a round ball, roll it, and then they push it down so that it forms a little sort of like the shape of a cookie, right? And it goes fast. Choom, choom, choom. And they're working and they pile them all up. And everybody who had brought some of that special rice, we get our share, and this mochi is then, you can eat it. Some of the mochi, they put something sweet inside the middle, but most of them are plain, and you could sort of cook them on a little grill over the stove top, kind of toast them, and you could eat it with soy sauce and sugar. But a lot of people, myself especially, like it in special soup, and called ozoni. It was a very traditional eating on New Year's Day. It's a special soup stock, you put a little vegetables in it, and then you put these mochi in there, and they get real soft, and then these mochi could be frozen, and during the year, you could put them into, I even put them into chicken noodle soup, and I love that kind of mochi. Adrian likes it. Toasted and with soy sauce and sugar. I remember there was my parents used to have New Year's gathering, and mochi would be served, and the ozoni. And every year, usually they invited some guests. One year was a guest who was not familiar with Japanese New Year foods. And he said, oh, did you ever have mochi? And then he said, I don't remember. Then he sort of described it. And then she said a very funny thing. She said, I know. It's that white stuff that you chew and nothing happens. but anyway... We had a very nice mochitsuki gathering in my brother's kitchen over there, where gets warm in there, and we're all covered with the white cornstarch, and we're all yelling at each other and bantering, and very festive. I couldn't help think about meeting together, sharing life together. Maybe when we're young, we may tend to take family gatherings for granted. But the older we get, we realize that this is one of the greatest interdependencies. We realize because of the impermanence of things, we appreciate that present moment so much, and we see it through the two eyes of impermanence and interdependence. Yes, indeed. Well, today's guest to give us a Dharma glimpse is Sayol Seppin. He was part of the LM3 group. He's the past outgoing president of 2013 for the Trailblazers group. And this year has been a year of great change for him, and he moved to L.A. from Florida, and he got a new job. And then, of course, being in L.A., he's only three and a half, maybe 4 hours at the most drive from Course Road, from Bright Dawn here. And we're looking forward to him being able to come and visit more. He always comes to the Bright Dawn L.A. Ministry induction ceremony in May. He's been a great help for Bright Dawn. So for our Dharma glimpse today, yes, Sayol Sensei.
Oh, good morning. I'm very happy and honored to be here to give the final Dharma glimpse for the year 2013. It just kind of hit me yesterday, thinking, wow, this is the last weekend of 2013, and our next weekend will be the weekend of 2014. So, and I think that's really what I wanted to talk about today, and that's change. This year for me has definitely been a year of change. It's been my spiritual practice. I moved to California back in May of this year, but in January of this year, I had no idea, I had no clue that I would be leaving Florida. So I was a little bit nervous, a little bit frightened, you know, going from sort of a stable environment after spending 13 years in Florida to, you know, moving to California with no job, not really knowing where I was going to be living. A lot of these things bring up, you know, uncertainties and, again, sort of fear. And but I'm really learning that that's part of the process. It's okay to have fear for, you know, when things change, because it reminds us, hey, we're human. You know, we're always going to have these uncertainties and these fears. But as long as they don't trap us, as long as they don't keep us from pursuing changes in our lives, whether they be experiences or new jobs, new adventures in life, then fear can be our greatest ally. You know, it can really help us to say, okay, this is where I'm headed. And I know it's going to take some work, and I know I'm probably going to have moments of doubt, but I'm going to do it, you know. Some might consider fear to be an afflictive emotion, but I think fear sometimes also keeps me grounded, you know. That way, when I'm ready for change or change happens, I can look at it better. I can see what it is that I fear about it and work with it. You know, if I didn't have this fear, I think I'd be a little worried, because perhaps I'm not really living in the now, not really understanding what's happening, and not really appreciating what's happening. But and I'm not saying change is always something we have to fear. Sometimes change is great. You know, if you're getting a new job or promotion, you know, change at work or with school, you know, that it doesn't have to be frightful. It could be exciting. And I'm reminded of something that Doctor Who said in his the final episode of this year. I'm a very big Doctor Who fan, and this past week we saw the sort of the conclusion of Matt Smith, who was the actor to portray the Doctor, change. And that's always one of the things growing up as a fan of Doctor Who that I really admired, was that each of the new characters that came in changed and brought something new to the role of the Doctor. So it's always exciting, but there's always that moment of hesitation, like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to like this change or not. But every actor to portray the Doctor has always had their own quirks, their own ways of portraying the actor, which makes them so lovable. But this in his final episode, he did a line which I thought really came home to me, and that was, we all change. You know, we change every minute, every moment. We're not the same people we are. Even if you think back as a child, you're not the same person you were when you were 5 years old. And not just physically, but even mentally, we change. And the Doctor reassures his companion that that's okay. You know, you're going to change. You're always going to change. And as long as you always remember sort of where you came from, and not sort of look at change as something to forget. Well, let's forget that last life I had in Florida. So I still remember my life in Florida. And that's what helps me with change. So I was very happy in his final episode that he spoke so much of change before he regenerated. And that's a sort of a little technique that they use on the TV show to change the actors. You know, when an actor ends his role as the Doctor, a new actor takes over, and they refer to it as regeneration. So when I left Florida and came to California, I sort of thought of it in the same way. Just like the Doctor, I regenerated from my life in Florida, you know, the person I was in Florida, and now regenerate to a new person here in California. And again, I'm very happy to be able to find the Dharma in my favorite shows like Doctor Who, or you know, really finding all these teachings in life that remind us, hey, things like change, they're inevitable. So don't fear it. Go with it, you know. Learn from it. Grow from it, because then it's a great spiritual practice. It's not just something that happens along in life that you dread or look forward to. Instead, it's like your partner, or like a companion, like in Doctor Who, who always travels with a companion. Change is definitely my steady buddy, always there to remind me, hey, things are going to change. And you can either sit in a corner and cry, or you can take it and say, hey, this is good. This is a new new adventure. This is new ideas. I'm starting new things in life. I just wanted to leave that a little bit of a glimpse today. And I want to wish everybody a very happy new year. And may change come without fear. And may we all accept it with dignity and with lots of strength. So I put my hands together in Gansho and say Happy New Year, and here's to change. Thank you.
Indeed, here's to change. Very good. You know, here at the Bright Dawn, we sometimes get newsletters in the mail from other Buddhist centers and temples, and recently I got one from the Midwest Buddhist Temple, which is located in Chicago, and they reprinted an old article from the founder of their temple, Reverend Yodo Kono was his name, and he passed away, I don't know how many, a long time ago, maybe in the 60s. But he was one of the early pioneers who went to the Midwest from the California after the war, and they were really pioneers. His article is entitled, Thoughts at Year's End. by Reverend Cornell. And I'm just going to read and sometimes paraphrase some parts of it, but most of it will be just verbatim quoting his article, which, you know, which keep in mind that it was written in the late 50s. When young, I used to take joy in the coming of the new year. I felt that with the passing of each year, I was gradually becoming more of an adult. But, you know, when we usually pass the age of about 40, and perhaps younger for women, the passing of another year becomes a form of suffering. Each year seems to pass even faster than the preceding year. This year of 1958 will be over in just a few days. And although there are no differences in that each year has 365 days, except, of course, for leap year, these days seem to pass more quickly than before. This year I saw many people pass away and made me feel as if all my friends are leaving me, that I'm going to be just left all alone eventually. And then I consider that the day will arrive when even I will no longer be in this world, and I cannot prevent a dark feeling from coming over me. Whenever I open the Japanese community newspaper, I see the obituaries of people that I knew very well before the war and after. And whenever I see a familiar name, I cannot help but feel, yes, he helped me in that circumstance. Or, I owe her a debt for that. The times when my thoughts are brought to the past like that, and it results in my going before my altar and chanting a sutra, I seem to be doing this more and more, and a feeling of regret at not having done anything to repay all my indebtedness to these people seems to arise more frequently. Over the past 20 years, I have been given the privilege of spreading the teachings in the United States. My first assignment was in the fields of Central California, and I was invited to speak at all over that area. How well I was treated by all the people there. With the start of World War II, I was evacuated with all others of Japanese ancestry living in the Western United States and placed in a internment camp with 10,000 of others. And then again, I was here offered many kindnesses by persons from Japanese ancestry from all parts of the Western United States. I'm troubled that I'm unable to repay my indebtedness to all these people. There's nothing I can do. I'm a person who knows only how to place my hands together in gassho and apologize. But that is far from repaying indebtedness. I'm sure many others in the world are, may perhaps, indifferent about repaying their indebtedness. But, and I'm the most extreme in that regard. While thinking that I should at least write a letter of thanks and apology to those who still remain, I'm so pressed by work that I'm unable to do so. And it is while feeling like that that those I owe so much then pass away. A condolence telegram read at the funeral service is totally inadequate. My heart tightens when I consider how to express my thanks to them. The Venerable Master Shinran Shonin frequently used the term, Japanese term, ao, which means to meet. He first met the gentle Tendai Master Jichin on Mount Hiei, who initiated him into the Buddhist monkhood. He was able to enter the gate of Buddha-centered power, Pariki, as a result of meeting Master Honen. Further, as a result of being exiled to the Ichigo area, he was able to come in contact, to meet with the conditions that allowed him to reflect on who he truly was. This meeting, or coming into contact with, is very important. This matter of meeting is not something that comes about because you wish it to. It's not something you find as a result of seeking. Rather, it is something that is born or comes about as a result of certain causes and conditions. The cause of happening to meet, the condition of meeting. We are meeting through this article, because the causes and conditions for us to meet have been met. Meeting with the Buddha, meeting with the Dharma, these are all due to causes and conditions. Those who come in contact with the Dharma are indeed fortunate. Here is where we meet the Buddha. Now, even though born a human being, we would not have been able to come to meet or to come in contact with the Dharma teaching of Buddha-centered power, where we marvelously and mysteriously have been allowed to do so. Oh, there's no greater joy than that. And when we consider that we will all be together in a world of oneness, even our hardened hearts begin to thaw and become soft. That is when the Nembutsu escapes from our mouths without even our thinking about it. I have received much from those who have attended this temple, much more than I can express in words. I can only thank you and recite the Nembutsu. For only a few more days remain in this great year, and my sincere hope is that you will meet the new year in good health. And the article ends. Yeah, over all these years of time, we have a little transcendence in time, and we hear the heartfelt thoughts of a minister expressing his thoughts at the end of the year. And I think it's a natural thing that we sort of collect ourselves at the end of a year. If it wasn't for this cycle, one day follows another, how difficult it would be not to, say, oh, this is coming to an end, this kind of change from the old year to the new year. And it's a change from this week to the next week, from this yesterday to today. These sections or segments of time that we call time, passing of time, gives us the opportunity to say, who am I? What am I doing? Where am I going? And, what's going on? What are the causes and conditions that are giving rise to these changes that are happening? It has been said, an unexamined life is not worth living. Self-introspection and reflection upon oneself is the modus operandi of Buddhism. To look inward and then see everything. The whole universe there. And to reflect upon the causes and conditions. And that's those karmic influences that we generate and that we receive is the nature of reality, is the truth. Truth means reality, not something you believe in. It is. And when we embrace that, that's our right understanding. That's the Dharma. Well, that's all for today's broadcast. Till next time. Keep going, and you have a very beautiful last Sunday of 2013. Thank you.